Well, what is there to ask or share this evening?
I was reading this book this week, and one of the points he really stressed in it is the verse where Christ is talking to the disciples about marriage, and the disciples say, "Sir, if this is true, it's better that no man should marry." And he says, "Yes, that is true. And the man who can accept this commandment should." And so I wondered what your thoughts were as far as, like, knowing if you can accept that commandment or not.
Okay. Nobody here is particularly cares about marriage, though. Maybe I'll talk about that.
Oh, no.
Okay, where is that passage?
Is it
1 Corinthians 7?
No, there's a different one.
Matthew 10, maybe?
Getting close.
Matthew 19:11.
Okay, there's one in Matthew 19, and there's one a little bit earlier. Let's just start reading in verse 1, or let's see, verse 1. It came about that when Jesus had finished these words, he departed from Galilee and came into the region of Judea beyond the Jordan, and great multitudes followed him, and he healed them there. And some Pharisees came to him, testing him. They weren't really sincere in this. They're testing him, saying, "Is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife for any cause at all?" Now, there were two schools of thought at that time in Judaism. One was a stricter school of thought concerning divorce. One was basically a man can divorce his wife for any reason, period. And what that said was that if your wife burned the toast, and I mean literally, if she didn't cook breakfast right and so on, anything it said, what's it say in the law of Moses concerning divorce? Maybe we ought to look back at that first, back to Deuteronomy 24 and verse 1. When a man takes a wife and marries her, and it happens that she finds no favor in his eyes because he has found some indecency in her. And that's the word there that's kind of hard to know how to translate. And we know that's not talking about adultery, for example, because that was punishable by death, so it couldn't be that. And he writes her a certificate of divorce and puts it in her hand and sends her out from his house. And she leaves his house and goes and becomes another man's wife. And if the latter husband turns against her, literally hates her, which means turns against her, and writes her a certificate of divorce and puts it in her hand and sends her out of his house, or if the latter husband dies, who took her to be his wife, then her former husband, who sent her away, is not allowed to take her again to be his wife, since she has been defiled. For that is an abomination before the Lord, and you shall not bring sin on the land which the Lord your God gives you as an inheritance. So, what about this? I mean, this is the passage, and he finds some indecency in her, or however that it can be translated. Does anybody have a different translation of that? Verse 1. Anyone have the ESV? What's it?
I have the ESV, and it is indecency.
Indecency, okay. That was the big issue among the rabbis, is what is that? And the laxer school was, you know, just about anything, like burning the breakfast was sufficient. The stricter school said only for the cause of adultery. And so it seems like when it says back here in Matthew, when they were testing him, that they were kind of trying to find out, you know, who are you going to side with? And so, who did Jesus side with?
Stricter?
Yeah, actually he didn't side with either one, because he made it harder than the stricter one. Now, this is a thing that, well, let's just read on down through and we'll talk about it. And he answered and said, "Have you not read," verse 4 of Matthew 19, "that he who created them from the beginning made them male and female, and said, 'For this cause a man shall leave his father and mother, and shall cleave to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. Consequently, they are no more two, but one flesh. What therefore God has joined together, let no man separate. Now, it sounds like the answer that he gave is basically just flat out, this is permanent. And I think that is the standard that he's presenting to Christians. Now, I want to go on. I mean, there's some people that hold that Christians can never divorce, period. And that's not the position that I take. But I think that what he's setting forth there is the standard that we have in our minds when we enter into marriage. And that's the Christian view of marriage is not, well, I'll stay married until this happens or until that happens. In other words, let's suppose that your wife or your husband does commit adultery. Well, the Christian attitude is not, oh, now I've got some, now I can divorce them. You know, the Christian attitude is that you love that person, you bear with them, you forgive them, you go on. And so, why does he give any exception clause at all? Well, I think he gives the exception clause because we still live in a fallen world, and I think there's times. I mean, there's some situations that are so bad that I think it's wrong, especially when there's children involved, it would be wrong for the wife to stay. Or the husband to stay. And so I think the Lord gives that right to a person, you know, to get out of the marriage. But it's not like the Jews. The Jews were taking, well, you know, I'm looking for this excuse. Do I have one excuse or do I have 100 excuses? And he says, neither one. When you get married, that's it. And so then they say to him, verse 7, they said to him, why then did Moses command to give her a certificate and divorce her? He said to them, because of your hardness of heart, Moses permitted you to divorce your wives, but from the beginning it has not been this way. Now, this is a big thing because a lot of times God deals with us on the basis of where we are. And you remember Jesus said, I have many things. He said to the disciples, I have many things to say to you, but you're not able to bear them now. And I think if you want to, there's a lot of tough questions about the Old Testament. Why did, you know, how in the world could that be in the Bible? And, you know, you'll read some stories in the Old Testament. It's like, how could God ever allow that even to happen or whatever? And I think the answer is that he had many things to say to us, but the human race wasn't able to bear it at the time. And it's like, so you have polygamy, for example, was permitted in the Old Testament. And as time goes on, you see more and more God's teaching them, trying to teach them basic, simple things, like when he says an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. Well, what's that talking about? You know, God says an eye for an eye. Well, some guy pokes my eye out, so I get vengeance on him. Is that the idea? What was that eye for an eye? What was that about?
Was it I heard this week there was a limitation to keep them from upping the ante and like.
So first of all, it limits. But now, what was the Old Testament? Was the Old Testament Israel like the church? I mean, what was Old Testament Israel? Physical nation. Civil nation. So God's giving laws for the society. And what's he teach the society? What kind of punishment would be fair for a guy that deliberately got another guy down and cut his hand off? What would be a fair punishment for him? You see that? So God says eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. That's what, literally what they did. So you think twice before you break this guy's teeth out because that's what's going to happen to you. And it's going to be perfectly balanced, you know. You cut his hand off. That's what the civil justice, that's what happens to you. Now, that's pretty rough medicine, but that's justice. And it's perfectly balanced. It's not too severe of a punishment. You say, well, that's too severe. No, it isn't. It's what you did to the guy. And so God is teaching. And I mean, once you begin, and see, he's laying that foundation first, so that they can begin to realize something about fairness and about justice and about how God just can't forgive sins. I mean, justice has to be satisfied. So that's first. And then in the Sermon on the Mount, you have all these things applied to individual How am I supposed to act toward my enemy? Well, the government's job is to get justice, but not that's not my job. Mine is to turn the other cheek and to be used in the salvation of that person. See, that's a different thing. So what's happening here with divorce? Well, Jesus tells us, he says, because of the hardness of your heart, Moses allowed you, he permitted it. So what's going on there? Well, God didn't permit divorce because he liked divorce. He permitted, and particularly here, when you read in some translations, it brings it out clear. It says, let him give her a certificate of divorce. There in Deuteronomy. So in other words, here's a guy, he's going to divorce his wife anyway, and God steps in the law, and he says, look, you need to give her a certificate so that she's not just trash out here. She has an official certificate about this. And so there had to be a writing, in other words. Now you see the idea? It's protecting the women, in other words. What about the thing of she can't go back and marry her first husband? That's a question that comes up because sometimes you have people that are divorced and they want to remarry. I mean, you'll have, let's say here's a couple that get divorced and a year down the line, one of them is converted and the other one, the one that caused the problems gets converted and he wants to get right with God and take his wife back, which is it permissible or not? I mean, it said there in Deuteronomy that you can't go back to. What about that?
Well, in Deuteronomy, it was after they remarried. They'd already married somebody else.
Okay, they married. Let's suppose that she had married somebody else and he had died or what have you. What are we supposed to do with the law of Moses? Are we supposed to follow that way, or what's our attitude to be to the law? Jesus said, "Not one jot or tittle shall pass from the law until all be accomplished." Whoever annuls one of the least of these commandments and teaches other men in that way shall be called least in the kingdom of heaven. So he's talking to us. So, what are you going to do with that? What would you tell them? You can go ahead and marry that person, your former husband, or what?
Funny. Doesn't the new covenant supersede that? With meaning, now the law has been made higher, and you have to obey it. At a higher standard or something.
Okay, what would be the higher standard than saying you can't go back to your first husband? Let me ask it this way. Why would God ever say that about you can't go back to your first husband? That gets you closer to the truth. I mean, you could go back to the law and you say, look, God says that just like that's what these scribes were doing. They're saying, good, you know, it says here in the law that you can divorce her. And they were using that. Now, how should they have done? What should they have done when they look back at that? Well, Jesus tells us it was because of the hardness of their hearts. So that's the first thing. You say, well, look, that commandment was not a commandment to divorce. That was a commandment to give a certificate of divorce. And it was regulating the abuse of this thing to protect the women. But go ahead and extend that on out a little bit. I mean, what would you say, Rebecca, one of your friends, I don't know if you know any friends that have gotten divorced, remarried, and then they're wanting to marry the person that they first were married to. But anyway, what do we say to that? I mean, I've known of situations. Mm-hmm. People have said, I want to marry so-and-so. And you say, what? And they say, well, she was my wife. You know, and he would say, no, that says there you can't go back and marry.
Didn't Keith McLeod, was it Keith McLeod who, his wife left him?
She left him, but she didn't remarry, I don't think. But she did eventually come back. Nobody wants to venture there.
If their hearts are in the right place and they really want the marriage to glorify God and to please God, then... And like you can see that, then it could be good. And as far as the Old Testament law, could you Like, you know, Paul talks about how the, you know, the ox not being muzzled is like, uses that as an example for, you know, why people should give to missionaries or pastors and stuff. So it's like, he's saying, you know, God's not concerned with oxen. And as far as the Old Testament commandment, like, could it be that, like, God doesn't want people to be lighthearted about marriage?
Exactly. I think that's the reason. Here they are. They're hard-hearted. They're saying, look, she burned the toast. I'm sick and tired of putting up with her. I'm going to divorce her. God steps in and he says, you're not going to divorce her without giving her a certificate. All right? And then he says, furthermore, if you ever divorce her, you're never getting her back. So he's regulating something that was evil. And he's saying, you're not going to pass your wife around to different people and, you know, and then this guy divorces her and then you get to have her back if you want to or whatever. This is a serious deal, in other words. You see that? Now, as Christians, we come along to the Old Testament law and we read it through the eyes of Christ. We read it through the New Testament. And so we're not under any of those things directly, but we're under all of it as far as a revelation of God's character. The problem is you've got to figure out what was God saying to us. You can't just take it directly. What was God saying in that? And we see from this right here that Jesus points us in that direction. He says, that's not what God was saying. He wasn't saying divorce your wife anytime you want to. He was saying you've got to realize how serious this is, and you cannot use your wife like. I mean, you got to realize. I mean, in the old cultures, in the Old Testament cultures, the wife was like an object. It was like a piece of property. Your wife was like a piece of property. Even under Roman law, the father could kill one of his children if he wanted to. That's the kind of situation it was. So, if father gets mad at his kid and beats him to death, they wouldn't do a thing. It wasn't even an issue. And the way that women were treated was similar. So we don't realize what Christ has done for the role of women. And it's unbelievable, the difference. When Paul in the New Testament, when he says in Christ there's neither male nor female, that was something so radical. I mean, nobody said anything like that. And we read that, you know, we read right over that. But that was incredible. So, back to what it's saying here. Yeah. Verse 8, he said to them, because of your hardness of heart, Moses permitted you to divorce your wives, but from the beginning it has not been this way. Now, what's that talking about?
Is it talking about before the fall?
All right. From the beginning, if you go back to the beginning, in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth. So what about in the beginning? What was true in the beginning?
Hearts weren't hard.
Yeah. All right. And what was the situation in terms of marriage? What did God say about marriage? All right. First thing, shall cleave to his wife. Did it say wives? So that gives us a clue on the thing of polygamy. See, God from the beginning made male and female. He had one man and one woman. He shall leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife, and the two shall be one flesh. Now, Jesus said, but if they're one flesh, let no man separate what God has joined together. All right, so that tells us the pattern, you see. And so they're coming and they're saying, can you divorce for this, or are you going to side with this guy or this guy? You know, Shammai or Hillel, or I think who it was. Are you going to side with him and take the hard position, or are you going to take the easy position? And he says, no, I'm going to take the Christian position, which is go back to the reason, what God intended all along for marriage, and that is something permanent that God joins together. Now, he says, I say to you, verse 9, I say to you, whoever divorces his wife, except for immorality. Now, he brings this in here. And he brings it in, like I said earlier, and I think that it's a mistake. I mean, I think this ideal of perfection, of unity that never changes, I think that's the God-given standard. But I think it's a mistake to take that then and put it on people. Because if you're dealing with a Christian, you're dealing with somebody that doesn't want to get a divorce. and they've done everything. I mean, it's like when you begin to see what a Christian goes through. I mean, I've seen women whose husbands that professed to be Christians when they got married and looked like they were Christians, and the guy ends up going out to prostitutes, and he lives that way all the time. And eventually, I mean, the woman puts up with that for years, but eventually she comes to the place where this, I mean, what kind of, is this an atmosphere you're going to raise children in and so on? Can't do that. And eventually, it would be wrong to say to her that she can't divorce this guy. In fact, she should divorce him in some situations because it's unclean, the stuff that's going on. So I think we ought to get both sides here. The Lord holds up the standard there, but he says we're talking about something that Christians have in their hearts. I'm not talking about a law that locks you into some kind of unclean situation. And so he brings in this clause, except for immorality. All right? And marries another, commits adultery. The disciples said to him, if the relation of the man to his wife, we're finally getting to the question here. If the relation of the man to his wife, with his wife, is like this, it's better not to marry. Now they're dumbfounded. You know, their mouths are hanging open. But he said to them, not all men can accept this statement, but only those to whom it has been given. For there are eunuchs who were born that way from their mother's womb. Now, what was a eunuch? I guess I'm going to have to ask this. What was a eunuch? What was the purpose of eunuch? Why did they have eunuchs? Or what?
So that the king could have men care for his harem and not have to worry
all
about
it. All right. So now we're going back to Old Testament culture again. You've got these men that have been castrated so that they cannot do anything to these women that they're around. And so they're serving in the royal court. And, I mean, this is an evil situation. You think when Paul goes out, or who is it? Philip goes and preaches to the Ethiopian eunuch. That guy was an Ethiopian eunuch. He served in a court. And the idea that men did this to other men for that reason, I mean, it's totally sick. And this is what was going on in the culture. And Jesus said there are eunuchs who were born that way from their mother's womb. They just were born that way. And there are eunuchs who were made eunuchs by men. And there are also eunuchs who made themselves eunuchs for the sake of the kingdom of heaven. He who is able to accept this, let him accept it. Now, that's pretty hard stuff, isn't it? What about they made themselves eunuchs? Is that talking about physical mutilation? Yes or no?
No.
No, okay. How do you know? I mean, who was it? Origen, one of the church fathers, that made himself a eunuch because of this verse. How do you know it's? How do you know that it's not physical?
There's a other places where it talks about staying single. It talks about self-control.
Okay.
It's a totally different approach if you're approaching it on the basis of self-control.
I'd say the way we know is because the way Christ was. I mean, you know because you're a Christian. You know the things that Christ taught. Well, give me another example.
Love your neighbor as you love yourself. So you wouldn't do that.
Love yourself as you love your neighbor. Give me another example.
An eye for an eye.
No, but if your eye causes you.
Yeah, that's what I'm sorry. Yeah.
If your eye causes you to stumble, what?
Rip it out.
Rip it out and cast it from you. If your hand causes you to stumble, cut it off. Now, is he saying literally mutilate yourself? It's not what he's saying. And so we know that he's talking figuratively here when he says there are those that have made themselves eunuchs for the sake of the kingdom of heaven. So, sorry, guys, it's better not to marry. So if you're single, That's it. If you really want God's best, you really want God's best. Is that what it means? What's he mean it's better not to marry? What do they mean it's better not to marry?
Well, Paul talked about how a single person can go about God's business and not have to worry about the needs of his wife.
Okay, and let me just say a few things here. It says there are those who have made themselves eunuchs. Why? For the sake of the kingdom of heaven. In other words, normally it would be desirable to be married, but because of some situation that they're in, they have denied the thing that's good in itself in order to accomplish something else. So for the sake of the kingdom of heaven. Now, let me just say this. First of all, it is normally God's will for you to be married. Breathe a sigh of relief on that. That's normally God's will. Now, let me say something else. If it hadn't been for the fall, I believe every person would have been married. I think that's the pattern God sets. He said it's not good for man to be alone. That's a general statement. He didn't say it's not good for some men not to be alone. It's not good for anybody to be alone. And so, apart from sin in this world, apart from the fall, everybody would have a wife and everybody would have a husband. Of course, their husband would never die either, and their wife would never die. See, there's all kinds of things that have come in because of sin. Another thing is you'd never have any arguments about anything. You know, there's all kinds of stuff. You start saying, well, what if there had never been sin? This is what you get into. But what I'm saying is, and these things to me are very helpful things. First of all, marriage is God's idea. It's not something that, you know, I want to get married, but God's a killjoy and he doesn't want me to get married. And, you know, because I want to so bad that he probably doesn't want me to. Those are slanders that the devil puts in your mind about God. God designed marriage. God was the one that said it's not good to be alone. He knows what it's like. He knows what the loneliness is like. He knows that this is a good thing. So in itself, it's a good thing. So it's God's idea. It's something that God designed. It's a good thing. So that's the foundation of it. And normally, I mean, if it weren't for sin, everybody would be married. So you start out with that foundation. Now, it says sometimes it can be better not to marry because of the situation we're in, it can be better not to marry. And there are times when that's true. I mean, there are some times where it's really rough to serve the Lord with a family. Like when they're going around killing everybody, and they're going to kill your family if you don't deny the Lord. I mean, you don't realize what this is like until you get married, but to get on a plane and go out to the mission field and think, I might die on this plane, that is nothing. It's like, so what? You know, but if you get on the plane and you're going out and you think, I might die on this plane, and the first thing you think about is your wife and children. And so there's this concern. And so, there's so many things to talk about, and I don't know if this is even intelligible. Let's read 1 Corinthians 7 before we go any further. We probably won't read everything, but we'll read down through here, beginning at verse 1. Now concerning the things about which you wrote, it is good for a man not to touch a woman, but because of immoralities, let each man have his own wife, and let each woman have her own husband. Let the husband fulfill his duty to his wife, and likewise also the wife to her husband. The wife does not have authority over her own body, but the husband does, and likewise also the husband does not have authority over his own body, but the wife does. Stop depriving one another except by agreement for a time, that you may devote yourselves to prayer, and come together again, lest Satan tempt you because of your lack of self-control. But this I say by way of concession, not of command. Yet I wish that all men were even as I myself am. However, each man has his own gift from God, one in this manner and another in that. But I say to the unmarried and to widows that it is good for them if they remain even as I. Now, what's he mean then when he says, I wish that all men were even as I, myself, and what's that mean? Unmarried. So Paul, apparently here, at least at this time, was not married. And so, even as I. It's good for them if they remain even as I, but if they do not have self-control, let them marry, for it is better to marry than to burn. But to the married I give instructions, not I but the Lord, that the wife should not leave her husband. If she does leave, let her remain unmarried or else be reconciled to her husband, and that the husband should not send his wife away. But to the rest I say, not the Lord, that if any brother has a wife who is an unbeliever and she consents to live with him, let him not send her away. A woman who has an unbelieving husband and he consents to live with her, let her not send her husband away. Oh, there's so much in here. I mean, there's hundreds of things we could talk about here. For the unbelieving husband is sanctified through his wife, and the unbelieving wife is sanctified through her believing husband. For otherwise your children are unclean, but now they're holy. Yet if the unbelieving one leaves, let him leave. The brother or sister is not under bondage in such cases, but God has called us to peace. For how do you know, a wife, whether you will save your husband? Or how do you know, a husband, whether you will save your wife? Only as the Lord has assigned to each one, as God has called each, in this manner let him walk, and thus I direct in all the churches. Was any man called, already circumcised, let him not become uncircumcised. Has anyone been called in uncircumcision, let him not be circumcised. Circumcision is nothing, and uncircumcision is nothing, but what matters is the keeping of the commandments of God. Let each man remain in that condition in which he was called. Were you called while a slave, do not worry about it. But if you're able to also to become free, rather do that. For he who is called in the Lord while a slave is the Lord's freedman. Likewise, he who was called while free is Christ's slave. You were bought with a price. Do not become slaves of men. Brethren, let each one remain with God in that condition with which he is called. And then he goes on and talks about whether or not to marry and so on. Verse 26. I think it is good in view of the present distress that it is good for man to remain as he is. Are you bound to a wife? Do not seek to be released. Are you released from a wife? Do not seek a wife. But if you should marry, you've not sinned. If a virgin should marry, she's not sinned, yet such will have trouble in this life, and literally tribulation in the flesh. And I'm trying to spare you. But this I say, brethren, the time has been shortened, so that from now on, both those who have wives should be as though they had none, and those who weep as though they did not weep, and those who rejoice as though they did not rejoice, and those who buy as though they did not possess, and those who use the world as though they did not make full use of it, for the form of this world is passing away. But I want you to be free from concern. One who's unmarried is concerned about the things of the Lord, how he may please the Lord. The one who is married is concerned about the things of the world, how he may please his wife, and his interests are divided. The woman who is unmarried and the virgin is concerned about the things of the Lord, that she may be holy both in body and spirit. But the one who is married is concerned about the things of the world, how she may please her husband. This I say for your own benefit. Not to put a restraint upon you, but to promote what's seemly and to secure undistracted devotion to the Lord. But if any man thinks that he's acting unbecomingly toward his virgin, if she should be of full age, and if it must be so, let him do what he wishes. He does not sin, let them marry. But he who stands firm in his heart, being under no constraint, but has authority over his own will, and has decided that in his own heart, to keep his own virgin. Now, the word daughter supplied, and I think it's a mistake. But anyway, he will do well. So then both he who gives his own virgin in marriage does well, and he who does not give her in marriage will do better. And a wife is bound as long as her husband lives, but if her husband is dead, she is free to be married to whom she wishes, but only in the Lord. In my opinion, she's happier if she remains as she is. I think that I also have the Spirit of God. Now, let's get it down to the people in this room. I won't mention names. But anybody that's single here, you're facing this. And the question is it it's better you could be undistracted. If you weren't married, you could be undistracted in your devotion to the Lord. So do you want God's best or you want second best? Amanda?
Well, either way, you're going to get God's best. I mean, it's not going to be married because even through that, like, you work through trials and He brings you out.
Okay. So it doesn't matter what you do? This is kind of a hard question, isn't it?
I feel like you could be distracted by it even before you're married.
That's a good point. That's a good point. I think that's what he means when he says it's better to marry than to burn. It's not the idea that if you get married, you've got a problem with lust. If you get married, that'll be taken care of. It does not work that way. In fact, it gets worse probably. That's not, if you have the idea, I'm defeated by sin, I'm defeated by lust, so if I get married, this will all be taken care of. That's baloney. That's, the devil tells you that. The better to marry than to burn, I think what it's talking about, myself, I think what it's talking about is what happened. If you ever read the life of Elizabeth Elliot and Jim Elliot, they met each other, they fell head over heels in love for each other, they were desperate to get married, and they both decided to put God first, quote unquote, and deny getting married and go in separate mission fields while they're riding back and forth crazy about each other. See, that is exactly what I think Paul says not to do. He says, you know, you're thinking 24/7 about this other person, and you're not getting married. That's not smart. That's not what God wants. He says, if you meet somebody, then it's you marry. You know, better to marry than to have that all the time, burning with desire. And I don't think it's necessarily an evil thing. It's just talking about reality. So once you meet the right person, you know, you don't try to do this platonic, you know, holy man deal of we're going to deny and we're not going to marry. I mean, I think there's some real snares that Christians have gotten into. If you read down through church history, you know, where two people are in love with each other and they say, well, the Lord must not want this because of such and such, and they end up denying themselves, and it's miserable. So Reagan had a good point there, and that is you can be distracted even while you're single. You can be distracted from serving the Lord. So the thing I was getting at is marriage second best? That's the issue. All right? Now, he says here, that you can have undistracted devotion to the Lord. Let me see. What such shall have tribulation in the flesh. Where there were some other things here. Good to remain as you are. And what about this thing of he that is married cares about the things of the world? What about that? You want to be worldly? Andy, see, you gave up. You used to be spiritual, and now you're worldly, both of you. What's that mean?
Talking more about physical things here.
All right, you've got all these concerns that are there, and they're there. Now, here's another mistake. George Whitefield married this woman, but he said, you know, God forbid that I should ever say, I have married a wife and I cannot come. You remember the parable? Jesus told the invitation, the guy says, I've married a wife and I can't come. So Whitefield says, God forbid that I should ever say that. So in other words, he's going to get married, but he's going to act like he's not married. Well, that's wrong. That's not spiritual. And so he's away from home when his wife has the first child, and the child ends up dying, and, you know, that's not what it means. I mean, if God wants you to get married, you're going to, it's wrong if you don't give your attention to the marriage. See? So they've got to get rid of that idea. All right, what about this idea that singleness is higher than marriage? Is it true? I mean, this is how this all got started. Mm-hmm. If that's the way it is, it's better not to get married. He says not everybody's able to handle that. But if you are, you know, he that's able to receive it, let him receive it. So it sounds like he's saying it's better if you're not. And Paul says that. So is it better? How do you fit that in?
Well, are there like two kind of different issues? Because Paul says that singleness can be used to, like, you can serve God in that way and you're not having to focus on your wife and family. But at the same time, he also says that God made the institution of marriage to be a picture to the world of the relationship between Christ and the church.
Let me give an example that I think is kind of helpful or has helped me. He goes through a list of gifts of the Spirit and different works that people are called to in Corinthians, and just tell me which would be higher, being an apostle or speaking in tongues?
Apostle.
Apostle's higher. He gave some apostles, and then what?
Prophets,
and then pastor, teachers, and, you know, and there's this order of things. And so, all right, I'm a pastor. I get to thinking, you know, apostle's higher than pastor. Now, suppose I try to be an apostle when God has called me to be a pastor. Is that higher? See, that's lower. Now, suppose you try to remain single when God has called you to be married. He hasn't given you that gift. That's lower. That's something turns into something ugly. That's what you have in the Catholic Church in monks and nuns. You see, it's a super spiritual idea that, you know, I'm going to have something even higher than what God purposed. That's not possible. And so let me see if I can find the verse. Well, before that, verse 7. Yet I wish that all men were even as I myself am. So I could wish that, you know, this wasn't a problem. But the fact is, however, each man has his own gift from God, one in this manner and another in that. So, if you have a gift from God, and you're called to be an apostle, that's great. If you have a gift from God and you're called to be something less than that, that's great. So one way of looking at it, you can say, look, yeah, singleness, that's superior. You know, that's really, you know, you can really serve God unhindered. You don't have, your children aren't dying on the mission field. And I mean, some of these people like Jonathan Goforth, one child after another died out on the mission field. And then a lot of these missionaries were sending their kids back to a different country. I mean, I know of some cases of missionaries, some of these books that we have, I know of some cases of guys at council with some of those children. And they were messed up because their parents left them to, quote, serve the Lord and sent their kids off. They never even knew their parents. And so some of these things, you know, it's a case of us trying to go beyond what the Scripture says. And there might be some cases where they shouldn't have been on the mission field. Maybe God wanted something else. But why, how do I know that? Because you got kids, you know. And so how do I know God doesn't want me to live in this grass hut where my kids will die by next summer? Well, because He gave you kids. You know, so I don't know. I mean, we don't want to judge other people on these things. But I know that for yourself, first of all, don't let the devil tell you that God doesn't care about the fact that you're single and you're lonely and whatever. God was the one that invented marriage, and normally it's His will. However, just like everything else in your life, you've got to lay that on the altar and you've got to mean it. And there were times when I was single where, I mean, I didn't get married until I was 30. And that gives you plenty of time to decide whether or not you're going to give this to God. And you go back, I mean, it's not a one-time deal, but you go out, I mean, every one of you ought to be in your heart, you ought to be saying to God, Lord, you know, I mean, and I don't know, some of you may have the gift of singleness, and you're saying, Lord, you know how good it is for me to be single. I sure hope, I don't know if that's what you're saying or not, but you may be saying something like, Lord, you know how much I'd like to be married, but, and that really mean it, nevertheless, not my will, but your will be done. And you're putting it in God's hands for real. And when you do that, and it's real, where you know that by doing that, you may be saying goodbye to this. That's what God, that's, I mean, he wants to be God in your life. Not whether or not you have, I mean, are you not going to serve God if he doesn't give you a husband or he doesn't give you a wife? You know, you say, I want what God wants, no matter how hard it is, that's what I want. And so that's the first step. You say, I know that this is something good, it's not something inferior, it's not something I'm going to try to deny myself in some way if God gives me the right person. And normally that this is what he's going to want, but I want his will. And I know that he's good, and I know that he cares about me, and he's not holding out anything good for me. All right, then the next thing, if you go back there to the beginning, God was the one that designed marriage. And what happened? He puts a man to sleep, takes a rib from his side, fashions her into the woman, and brings her to the man. And to me, that's really helpful because, first of all, Adam is not, he didn't even know there was such a thing as a woman. In fact, there wasn't. And he would not have thought up such a nice thing if he had tried. I mean, all he had done was name all these animals. It's like, I mean, God is able to do so much better in these things than we are. But there's some principles here. First of all, he's not out beating the bushes trying to find somebody. And the very best thing you can possibly do if you're a single guy is to do what Adam did, and that is go to sleep until God wakes you up and says, here she is. I mean, if you're all the time thinking, you know, like, all right, I get to go to this conference. Oh, maybe she might be there, you know. Now, I got so sick of that stuff in myself that I determined I refuse to go to a conference because I think I might meet a girl. I'm going to go for one reason only, because I want to seek God and I want to know God. If I don't have that reason for going, I'm not going. That's the attitude you take. I don't know how many of these things to tell. This is all being taped. You have to cut it out. I remember when I was in high school, there was this girl I was interested in. And at the time, right after I became a Christian, I was living in a different city, and they had a church baseball team where this church that I was going to. And I went over to the girls, whatever they call it, bullpen or dugout or something. And I was standing there, you know, leaning over the fence. Who did I tell this story to?
Us.
I told it to all of you? Yeah. I've already told.
Okay.
Yeah, I shouldn't tell this again then, probably.
Many haven't heard.
Many haven't.
John hasn't.
I have to share with a brother in Cleveland.
I was leaning over the fence. You know, I don't know how old I was at the time, maybe 16 or 17, but I was leaning over the fence, you know, talking. Anyway, my brother-in-law, John, made the comment afterward. He said, you look like some kind of snake hanging around. I mean, I got to thinking about it. That was kind of what it was, you know. I mean, it's like, this is not for princes to do. I don't have to do this. I mean, it's like God's able to work this stuff out. And that image of that snake hanging out, I don't know, maybe I saw a picture somewhere of a snake hanging over a fence, you know, it's like, and so I'd, whenever these things came up later, that would come to my mind. It's like, you know, I met this girl, I thought, boy, this could be the right one, you know, and I knew that if I wrote to her, she'd write to me. But by then, I was cured. And I thought, you know, no way. If God wants this to happen, he'll bring her back. And so I'm not going to be the snake hanging over the fence. That's as a guy, the thing you need to do, like when you're in college, the thing you need to do is to get as far away from that kind of stuff as you can and give your time to seeking God, to try to know God. Don't worry. He's going to bring you. Remember, God made the woman just the way he wanted, and then he brought her to the man. And until he brings the woman to the man, all you're going to do is get in trouble. You're going to get into a mess. And I mean, unless you're able to get married right then, all you're going to do is get into a mess by being awake. It's like, you know, and you can kind of tell when a guy's awake. You know, you know, across the room, it's like, this guy needs to go to sleep. Wait until God gets the woman for you and brings her to you. And so that there's an attitude there of putting it in God's hands, forget about it, and give yourself wholeheartedly to growing as a Christian. Now, what's the girl doing? Well, God took this rib and fashioned her into a woman. And so what's taking place, if God has somebody for you, what he's doing right now is fashioning you. So what do you give yourself to? You're not out looking for guys. You're saying, Lord, what else needs to be changed? What else needs to be shaped in my life? What else you need to do to me? And I guarantee you cannot be undistracted in that if you're all the time, maybe you're not the snake, but if you're all the time talking to the snake that's hanging on the fence. You've got to get away from that long enough that you can be undistracted. And so I think the big thing is, I mean, this is a step of faith. It's a step of faith, big time. It's like, well, what, you know, if I don't work at this, you know, it's never going to happen. Well, that's not true. And if I put this in God's hands, he's no telling what he's going to do. You know, he's going to really mess this up bad. That's not right.
It's pretty radical in our culture.
Yeah, it is. But look at what's going on in the culture. I mean, I look back at my friend. I look back at myself when I was in high school. And it's not, I mean, I don't have anything but regret. Nothing but a mountain of regret. But when you put it in God's hands, no regret. Are there any questions? If there are no questions, we'll be good. No. Is there anything else you want to talk about this? I mean, there's a lot of things in here that we didn't hit on.
I don't think you answered his original question.
All right. The original question is, they said, Lord, if that's the way it is, I mean, if married, and I think they're looking at it as, you know, this is something I can't get out of. You know, if this is something I can't get out of, it's better not to get into it. And I think he turns it a little bit, and he takes it and he says, there's some that remain single for the sake of the kingdom of heaven. And if you're able, you know, in other words, it is better not to marry, but not for the reason that you might be stuck with a nagging wife. For the reason that there's a lot of things that are a whole lot easier to go through in the Christian life if you don't have a family or a wife. One would be you don't have to see your kid. I mean, if you're in a situation where you're going to see your kids killed in front of you, that happens. I mean, and there's great pressures on people. There's great pressures on guys to cheat on their income tax when they don't have money for their kids to eat. You know, you've got a lot more pressure in that way, not to mention things like on the mission field. But I think he turns it. They say, well, we don't want to get into anything permanent. And I think he turns it from that. And he says, no. It is true, though, that it's better in terms of the kingdom, it's better not to marry. But not everybody, and here it is again, not everybody's able to receive that. What's that mean? He says, not everybody has that gift. Same thing Paul's saying. If you have the gift, then God's going to work it out, give grace, and he's going to bring life in that. And we, anybody that remains single and doesn't get married, you know, you really get shortchanged if you miss, if you spend the rest of your life in self-pity and don't enter into what God can do through the singleness. I mean, you got to say, well, Lord, it looks like I'm not going to be married. I'm asking you to turn this to something beyond anything I could imagine in terms of blessing. Mm-hmm. He's done that before for people that are unmarried. And he's also given husbands, in, I mean, people that are... How old was John Murray? 60?
He was old. Yeah, he was around that age.
So sometimes people get married late in life for the first time. Vance Havner, what, did he get his driver's license when he was 70? I think it was. He said, I wanted to think it over. So, sometimes maybe it's that way in marriage. Sometimes women get married when they're 45. I think it was the one godly Christian woman that I knew of that got married when she was 45. Had never been married before. So, you know, just because you're almost 20, no, it's not time to panic. Some girls panic. I mean, some girls panic, and that dishonors God. Like, man, I got to marry somebody. Well, there's one thing worse than being single, and that's being married to the wrong person. I guarantee that. So now did we finally get to your question, I guess?
My question was, how do you know if you have the gift?
Oh, man, we never even know. We got close to it. We beat around.
We're getting there.
I think that there would be a sense of... not like Paul says there, not being constrained in your... let me just read it here. He's under no compulsion. He who stands firm in his heart, being under no constraint, has authority over his own will, has decided in his own heart. So in other words, there's not this... there's a sense that it's a gift. I mean, there's a sense that you're not under constraint. You're not feeling misery every day because of not being married. Now, sometimes that can be because you haven't committed it to the Lord, too. But I mean, once a person has truly given these things to God, then I think that there would be a sense of peace in the matter. Does anybody here feel like they have a gift of singleness? Maybe it's kind of scary to say that because I'll probably be getting married in 6 months. Everybody hopes that they don't have a gift. Okay, I'll retract that question.
It seems like when the people that I have heard say that they think they're called singles, they're the ones that get married.
Yeah, I've noticed that.
Can you really know?
No, maybe not.
Well, I would say I think there's a more, and I don't mean this to skew the question, but I think maybe the more important question is really the issue of contentedness. And that is the gift that we are all called to. In 1 Corinthians 7, I mean, three different times in verse 20, and verse 24, and verse 26, there's this idea of remaining in one's present condition. And I just think the idea of just being completely satisfied and contented with who you are in the Lord currently in regards to either being single or married and just waiting on the Lord.
That's good. and you have in 21, were you called while a slave, let it not be a care to you. But if you're able also to become free, rather do that. So he's not saying, well, here I am, I'm a slave, and I've got to be content with that, and so I need to remain a slave forever. He's not saying that. But there's an attitude of victory in it. I think it's important to be honest with God, too. I mean, don't try to pretend that, try to stifle this all the time. I think the thing to do is pour it out to God. Pour out your heart to God. And, he knows it all anyway, but be honest. And then end off with, your will be done.
I guess I did have some things. I guess this, talking about singleness and things like that, just kind of encouragements. Just because I do remember, it wasn't that long ago for us, and so it was a constant barrage of just anxious thoughts and things like that, and so just I can't remember which psalm it was, but it's like when anxious thoughts surround you, your consolation soothe my soul, and so it's things like that, just that that the Lord is able to soothe that and take control of that, and then also just what Charles was saying about really desiring his will is just, that's so true, of just setting everything aside and just saying, thy way, Lord, not mine. And even if it's dark, even whatever, like you don't understand it, it's just, your will, Lord, and that's the best thing because it's, it's true. Just in marriage, it's like, knowing that this is whom the Lord has given you, and it's like you know that throughout it's been almost 9 months now, and so it's just like knowing that it helps a lot. It's like that's why we got married, because it's like we know this is what the Lord had for us, and we can stand upon that, and know it's
And that's why it's so important that we don't initiate it, but there's a sense that God's initiating.
Yeah, because you can be, like, two Christians can marry, and it's like, you're Christian, so it, not to say it'll be bad, but it's like, it's so much more glorious, knowing that, I didn't do this, it wasn't me that did this, so. It is hard, and, like again, what Charles was saying, to something you have to lay on the altar and just trust and have faith in God.
You were talking about the way the world goes, and it's hard to go against the world, and it's radical, or whatever. And I was thinking how the way that non-Christians look at you when they find out you're different or something. And it's incredible how they just kind of look at you like, what are you? And they don't understand, And it's just sometimes it's just like, it's a blessing, to see. It's kind of like just encouragement from the Lord and just help. And it's almost like a valuable token from the Lord. Like, they look at you like, I don't understand. Like, how are you happy? How are you anything? And it's true. Like, that's what's going through my mind. It's not like, and you want to say, you don't even know, I'm not perfect, except you do have a peace, you do have a life source that you're drawing from, and it's not from things that you're feeding in your mind and these.
Right. Well, the big lie is, of course, this is what Satan always has said, is that God knows. You shall not surely die. God knows that if you had that, you'd have life. You'd have something. So he holds out this stuff as being life. But then when you eat the fruit of it, it's death. And what you see among college students is that are following the ways of the world is not all this life and joy and peace. You see misery and death and tears and hidden things that that don't usually come out unless you're on the inside. And you see abuse of one another. I mean, the way that the guys use girls and vice versa is unbelievable. And, of course, the number one lie line is, I love you, which doesn't mean anything at all. It means I love myself.
I think something encouraging that Dawson Troutman said, this the other guy who started Navigators, he said that, like, I can't remember what it was, like 80% of the scripture that he memorized or something was when he was single.
Yeah.
I think it's encouraging to think, like when you're not married, you have, you know, you're undistracted. You have right. so much more time to see God. And
that's one thing, and one exhortation I'd give. If you're single right now, don't waste it. I mean, man, it's hard enough being single. But if you waste the time that you have right now, I mean, give everything you can to memorizing and to prayer and to pursuing, you know, seeking God. I mean, I'm still profiting now from stuff I memorized when I was single. Well, we're free to go in and eat or stay here and talk, whatever you want to do.